Blog Talk Radio.
African Conversations with your host, Charles Williams. Tonight we have Brother Che Nazareth, author of The Book They Never Wanted You to Read. Brother Che is a naturopathic physician, biomedical researcher, and historian, among other titles. His research has taken him around the world in search of the most ancient truths obscured by the architects and curators of global white supremacy. Welcome to African Conversations, Brother Che.
Thank you, brother. Glad to be on.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad you take the time out of your busy schedule to join us.
Yes,
I had an opportunity to read a little bit of your book, The Book They Never Wanted You to Read. And it was an interesting thing you were talking about in one of your chapters about the United States and its status as a corporation and all that sort of thing. Could you elaborate just a little briefly about what you talk about in your book in more depth in there, but what exactly is the United States of America?
Yeah, absolutely, brother. I'm hearing some music though in the background.
Oh yeah, the music is we're voicing over that.
Okay. Just to kind of sum it up, you know, the United States government as we know it. Has a jurisdiction, and we talk about government, we talk about countries, we talk about cities, we talk about, you know, and outside of that, states. Those are designated by jurisdictions, and each jurisdiction has a government body that's over it. So the United States government is a foreign corporation with respect to a state, and so it's a corporation that has a jurisdiction in the District of Columbia. And that's why the District of Columbia is a district and it's not a state. So it is separate from the other states, and it has authority and jurisdiction at the top of those other states. So all of our federal laws, all of our federal memorandums come out of the District of Columbia, and that is who's running the ball game here. That's what's controlling all of our politics, all of our presidents, is a foreign corporation. And it was never supposed to be that way, you know, according to the so-called the founding robbers. I don't call them the founding fathers. The founding robbers did not initially want it to be that way. But that's what ultimately happened as a result of, you know, of this whole enslavement thing, this whole white supremacy get-up.
Mm-hmm. So is D.C. analogous to what ancient Rome was to the Italian city-states and the Roman Empire?
Well, yeah, in many ways it is, because if you understand what military enclaves are, military enclaves are any structures that are run out of the District of Columbia. So, for example, your banks, all of your corporate banks that are in the United States, in the different states that are in this country, are controlled by the United States of America. Now, there's been a lot of controversy about the United States of America and what it is. What is the United States of America? Are there two United States of America? Well, actually three United States of America, according to the law. And this came out in 1945 by the Supreme Court. It was a decision that they made on the term the United States. So what happened, there was this controversy. A client and a couple of attorneys had brought a case trying to sue the United States. And as it turned out, when they tried to bring this lawsuit, there were three entities that were culpable for what they were trying to sue against. So they had to go to the Supreme Court to make a decision on well, what is the United States and how many of them is it? And the ruling came down again, the standing came down in 1945, and the definition, according to the Supreme Court, is that the United States may be used as one of several senses, or may be used in one of several senses. So it may be merely the name of a sovereign occupying a position analogous to that of other sovereign nations, so something like you said with Rome situation and Greece. Two, it may be designated as a territory over which the sovereignty of the United States extends. So we're looking at, again, the District of Columbia in that situation where the United States has an extension that has jurisdiction over different states within the country, within the continent. And then you have three, it may be a collective name of states that are united by what is called the United States Constitution. So by the legal definition, there are three United States, but the two of that three fall under the main corporate head, which is the United States of America, and that is the corporation that resides in the District of Columbia.
Yeah, that's a mindful.
Yeah, it's a lot, you know.
I mean, what kind of social political structure operates in such a confusing manner to keep its inhabitants or citizens or whatever, or servants, you know, confused as to the nature of its existence?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the name of the game. And to your point, brother, I mean, that is the how far the rabbit hole goes, as they say. You know, when you were looking at the ideal of these enclaves, like the banks, right? Also, any public school systems. We think that the public schools are under state jurisdiction, right? But if those public schools come under attack, for example, such as it did back in the 60s when, you know, African Americans were trying to go to school, so they called in the National Guard to protect those students to try to get them into that school. And I believe that was in Arkansas, right? So in that situation, who had the jurisdiction? Because the state has a jurisdiction to say, we didn't want blacks going to white schools. And the U.S. government said, no, we're going to send the National Guard in and we're going to protect those students and get them into the school. And there was a big fight between the state jurisdiction and the federal government's jurisdiction. At the end of the day, whether we want to admit it or not, it's the federal government who has the autonomy and the total jurisdiction in that situation. So that's what's controlling the schools. It controls your banks. It controls all of your interstate highways. It controls your currency, the actual money itself, the dollar bills that you have. All of that's run out of D.C. And so that's who's running this thing. That's who's controlling it. And that's the way they want it, to your point.
Right, yes, excellent. I mean, your book outlined all the details of the history of this particular, I would call it a criminal enterprise of the most grand scale.
Oh,
and it definitely needs to be thoroughly understood, and we're glad that you have taken the time to write and publish this, you know, great work. Since you mentioned currency, there's we can go into what exactly is currency and U.S. fiat currency and federal income tax. Like, could you just help the audience understand the nature of currency and how this particular corporation or whatever the United States is alleged to be regulates that?
Well, I know it can be somewhat confusing because no one's ever taught us this in school. You know, we go to school and we get economics, you know, and we get sometimes back in the day, they don't teach it as much now in the schools, but you used to take a civics class. You used to get class on civics. And these things used to be taught, but not at this level that we're discussing today, but just a basic understanding of how the money works and how currency works. And I think there's a lot to it that, you know, we can kind of get into. A lot of it deals with some esoteric, you know, sciences. And I think a lot of times we don't always recognize that when we talk about, you know, the money and how this thing works, you know, and why is it working that way? Because a lot of times we just kind of look at the surface of things and say, okay, well, this is what it is because this is on the surface. But really, when we're talking about money, we have to understand, number one, that the money that we're using, which means the money that is printed by what is called the Federal Reserve, that is a private corporation, okay, that has a contract with the federal government, okay? The Federal Reserve Bank is a private corporation that has a contract with the United States federal government, okay? The Federal Reserve Bank is not a member of government. It's not a part of the government. It has a contract with the government to print money, okay?
Right.
And they print that money, and they issue that money to the federal government. The federal government then issues that money to the banks, okay?
Okay.
That money is owned by the Federal Reserve Bank.
Right.
They own it, okay? And so when you buy something with someone else's property, when you go and purchase something with someone else's property, that's why you can never really own it, okay? So when you go out and you say you go down to Best Buy and we go and buy a television, right? We're going to buy that nice flat screen, that 52-inch flat screen TV, right?
Right.
We're going to buy that, and that's going to be $200 or whatever it costs, right? We're purchasing that TV with someone else's property. It's very, very important to understand that. And when we purchase something with someone else's property, then we lose a right of ownership. So we do not own that property outright, but we have what is called equitable interest in that property. So, in other words, I can buy that TV from Best Buy. I can come home and plug it into the wall and watch it, or I can turn around and sell that TV to one of my buddies, right? Maybe make a profit on it. Maybe sell it for $300, right? I bought it for $200, sold it to my buddy for $300. I made a $200 on the sale, put back in my pocket $300, okay? And my buddy takes a TV, and he could decide he wants to sell it or keep it or whatever he wants to do, has an equitable interest in it. But he never really owns the television. I never really own the television. And the reason why I never really owned it is because attached to that dollar bill, attached to that currency, you know, as we're talking about, is someone else's interest. And that's why when you go into foreclosure or say, for example, all of your things are being sold off, auctioned off to the government for tax evasion, or say you didn't pay your taxes, the government can come in and take all of their property back. You never owned it to begin with because they always have an equitable interest in that property. So everything that you buy under the Uniform Commercial Code that falls under interstate commerce, I know we throw a lot of kind of big terms out, but it's very important that we understand the outlay of this. Interstate commerce, anything that we buy under that is owned by the Federal Reserve Bank. They own it. They have a right to it, including your car. So say if you want to go and you buy a new car, right? Well, you buy a car from a dealership, but you don't own the car. Evidenced by the fact that you have to go down every year and get what on your car?
Registration, renew that. Registration.
You renew your tags. That's the government's
right.
Property. Because you need permission from your government to drive their car on their highway. When you get on the highway, what is it? It's from north to south, we usually take I-75. That's an interstate highway, interstate, that's owned by the federal government. That's their road. But there's also their car. So every time you get a car, you own an interest in the car, but you don't own the car outright. You have what is called a manufacturer statement of origin, a manufacturer statement of origin. And the manufacturer statement of origin is not what you hold. It's what the federal government holds. It's what the Federal Reserve Bank holds. They hold that manufacturer statement of origin. All you have is a certificate of title. So when you go get your car, you get a certificate of title. It's a certificate of the title, like Sears and Roebuck of Chicago.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So you don't own that, okay? that's what they own. So you have permission to use it, and then you pay rent on it, and you go get the tags every time your birthday come around, and you renew your tags and registration, and you pay the fee. If you don't pay the fee, what happens?
Right. You get fines and whatnot, right.
No, officer pull you over, right? Citation, give you a citation for not taking care of their property.
Yeah, I hear they send you a letter in the mail.
Yeah, and impound your car.
Right.
And auction your car off if they need to. But it's their car. It's their car. So I just wanted to, I know that was a lot that I gave you, but I wanted to lay that out and then kind of go back to what you had asked. You know, so what is currency? So currency is the flux and flow of interstate commerce. Currency was derived from the metaphysics of it is a current from the ocean. That's where it started from shipping. That's where our whole economics derives from, the shipping industry. You know, and evidence of that is when you buy something online or you order something off TV, right, you pay the fee, and they say pay for what? Shipping and handling. Right. So all of this comes out of the shipping industry. So whenever there is a ship at a dock, there's a ship at a dock, the ship is said to be called in berthing. Whenever there's a ship, you go down to the harbor, you see a ship at the dock, it's called to be in berthing. That ship is in berthing. Well, it's the same thing with our mom, with our mama, right? When our mama got to 10 months, her water broke.
Right.
Okay? And when her water broke, right, then it was time for the baby to come through the birth canal, where the ships come through a water canal. So all of these things have esoteric meanings. So when the ship is in berthing at the dock, anything that's manufactured on the water is under maritime admiralty law. So that's the law of the sea. And then you have civil law, but you have maritime admiralty law. And that's why that law is what it is, because the whole basis of Anglo-Saxon economics is based on the shipping industry. So when something is born, you have what is called a birth certificate. And when something dies, you have a death certificate. And it works the same way for people as it does for things. So if you, anything that comes into this country through import and export is said to be in birthing. So it comes across the harbor into the dock, and it's born. So it has a manufacturer's statement of origin. Then it has the manufacturer's statement of death. So all of those things are connected. So when going back to the esoterics, when a baby's born, you have to go see the what? You got to go see the doc.
Doc.
Because the ship is at the dock.
The doctor.
That's connected. You got to go see the doctor. You got to get what is called a document. You see what I'm
saying? Right. And it document those security instruments to certify its existence and ownership. Of this monster institution of everything burst and documented by the doctor.
By the doctor.
Wow, that's even more frightening than
it's crazy.
I mean, I've heard these terms, but you know, when you put it together and weave the narrative, you know,
And so anything that is born into commerce has that manufacturer's statement of origin. For the car, for vehicles, for things, for people, the manufacturer's statement of origin is the birth certificate, which is a four limited general party partnership between mama, daddy, the doctor, and the state, or the federal government, depending on what state you're in. Okay? So that's a limited general partnership agreement that gives the state and the federal government one-third ownership of the child that is produced under that document. That's why Child Protective Services can come in and take your kids, because they have a legal right to do so. If they did not have a legal right to do so, they could not do that. So what is happening is what we're doing is we're handing our children over. You know, they say in the scriptures, they say, you know, you hang your babies off into the fire of Moloch, right?
Right.
So you're handing your babies off to the government through a contract. And so everything that we've been talking about so far is predicated on contract agreements. We sign into these things and then wonder why we can't get out of them. So if the Child Protective Services comes in and there's no neglect, but they just want to take your baby, they can still take them because they already have one-third ownership, evidenced by the fact that you signed a birth certificate. You see? And
right,
so
yeah.
When we talk about currency and we talk about the ebb and flow of this whole thing, what we're really talking about is a uniform commercial code. And this uniform commercial code was adopted in 1854 in the United States, and that's when it started. And I think the last state to adopt one, I think it's 1974, I believe. But when we talk about this thing called uniform commercial code, everything in existence that works in commerce falls under that jurisdiction of the UCC, even us, even human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the problem is. Because you know, we're going to get into slavery, you know, a little bit later, but when we're talking about slavery and we're talking about, you know, emancipation, we're talking about the 14th Amendment and the 13th Amendment, now we begin to understand why these things are the way that they are. Who really has ownership of such and such person? Who really has the jurisdictional ownership of that? You know, and then what this whole economy is essentially it's a pimp economy. It's a pimp system. That everybody got to play the game in order for everybody to make the money. And so I like to do an analogy with the currency. We talk about the old maid. You ever play the old maid game with the cards?
No, I haven't. I wasn't good at cards. I never did play much. But
okay,
my wife's
good
at it.
I'm not that good at it either. But I put it like this. Say, you put it to you like this. Say you come to me. You say, you know, Brother Che, I want to buy this new iPhone from you. And I'm going to sell you my iPhone for $100. I'm going to sell Charles my iPhone for $100. So you come and meet me today, and, you know, you're going to pick up your iPhone, all right?
All right.
Well, just so happened, when you come to pick up the iPhone from me, you say, well, you know what, Che? I don't have $100 today. Okay, I don't have the money, but what I'm going to write you is an IOU. And next year, November, what's the date today?
7th.
November 7th, next year, 2012, I'm going to bring you the money. Okay?
Right.
And I say, okay. I say, I don't know about that, Charles. I'm not really comfortable with that. How about we do this? Well, how about we go ahead, you go ahead and write me that IOU. I give you the iPhone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to give you the iPhone next year, 2012. I'm not going to give it to you now. I'm going to give it to you in 2012 when you pay me the money, right? That's
right.
The market you do, right?
Right.
So, okay. Well, no, nothing has been exchanged between us. You didn't give me the money. I didn't give you the iPhone, right? I
right.
still got possession of the iPhone, and you still got possession. Well, you got possession of money that you don't really have, essentially. So
right.
we do this. So you said, well, you know what, Jake? I'm gonna go ahead and write you. I say, Charles, I'm gonna go ahead and write you an IOU. Okay, and so
right.
Charles, you write me the IOU for the iPhone for $100. You're going to pay me that money in 2012, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You with me?
Right. I'm with you.
Okay. And so I say, cool, I don't give you the iPhone, okay? But
mm-hmm.
you go ahead and talk it over with your friends and your wife, and you come back the next day. You come back to me the next day, and you say, you know what, I was talking to my friends, so I don't give you the phone, okay?
Right.
No, I give you the phone. I'm sorry, brother. I give you the phone, and you owe me the money, right?
Right.
Give me the IOU, and you take that phone, and you go out, and you run to another one of your friends, and say, yeah, man, I've been looking for an iPhone. And you be like, you know what, bro? I got an iPhone. I got an iPhone right here. Brother of mine, Che, he gave me this iPhone, and I'm supposed to pay him the money, you know, this time next year. for the iPhone. And you say, well, the brother said, okay, well, man, I'll buy it from you for $200. Right?
Right.
So instead of passing him the iPhone, what you do, you give him an IOU. You don't give him the actual iPhone. You give him a piece of paper that says, I owe you the iPhone.
Right. You know? Mm-hmm.
But you just did a transaction, so money was made. So
right.
You sold that iPhone to your friend for $200, but you did not give him the iPhone. You kept possession of the iPhone. Charles has possession of that iPhone.
Exactly.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I owe you. He takes that money that you gave your friend, not the money, but you give him the IOU, and your friend goes and meets somebody else. He meets one of his sisters, and his sister, she's looking for an iPhone. And he says, you know what? I got this receipt right here that says Charles owes me, for this IOU here, and I'm gonna give it to you, and I can sell the iPhone to you, but you can't get it to next year. So this thing goes on three or four more times, and after a year goes by, that IOU is gone between 3,000 people. Okay, 3,000 people have tried to sell this iPhone, but have written IOUs. And the IOU was the very first one that you had, because you never gave anybody the iPhone. You just gave them that I'm going to give you the iPhone next year at this particular date. So no one actually has the iPhone but Charles. Charles has the iPhone. Feel me?
Hey.
So November 7, 2012 rolled around, right?
Right.
Everybody's kind of made money off the IOU, but no one actually has physical possession of the iPhone. And then somebody comes in to your store or your office one day with the IOU that you wrote and says, it's November 7, 2012. Where's my iPhone? See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Who owns the iPhone? Who has possession of the iPhone?
Charles.
Yeah. Okay.
Even though he hasn't paid Che for the iPhone that he's getting
on
the
same. He ain't paid Che for the iPhone, has he?
No, he hasn't paid Che for the iPhone.
I
owe Che, and I owe, the last person with the IOU.
Yes. All right. Now, what happens? Now, all these people are supposed to be getting what?
The iPhone.
iPhone. You only got how many iPhones?
One.
You got one. Okay. So what I want you to do now is replace the iPhone with a block of gold in the Federal
mm-hmm.
Reserve Bank.
Right.
Okay. So instead of an iPhone, now it's gold. That's supposed to be backing up the money that we out here spending.
Yeah, the IOUs, right.
You see?
Right.
So now you see what the problem with, I mean, you know, I know you know, but I'm saying for our listeners, that is the essential dilemma of our economic model, our economic system.
Right.
It's really a Ponzi scheme. It's
right.
A very clever, deliberate Ponzi scheme, because nobody actually has possession of the property that the dollars are supposed to be backing up.
When right.
You get a dollar bill, it used to say on there, you can take this thing to a bank, and you take it to a bank, and they give you a gold. They give you a dollar's worth of gold.
Right.
Try taking a Federal Reserve fiat currency dollar bill to a bank today and see if they're going to give you gold. They won't give you gold. They'll look
right.
at you like you're crazy.
Because they don't have any for them.
They don't have any gold because there's no gold to back it up. So that's essentially, you know, kind of. I know it's kind of convoluted, but that's essentially our monetary system. And see, that's a problem because when everybody comes to get their money, it ain't enough property to back up the money. So the government does this: get them off of the gold standard, take away their right to property, and get them onto a credit fiat standard. And then we'll never have to have the property. And that's what's going on with the economic collapse that we're in right now. This is why the economy is collapsing, because we tried to use paper money three times before, and it never mm-hmm. works, because this is what happens. People start writing a whole bunch of IOUs, but with no real property to back it up. Now all the friends that you gave the iPhone, the IOU to for the iPhone, right?
Right.
All the friends you gave that IOU to, they're going out trying to pitch iPhones. But really, legally, you're the owner of the iPhone. You own it. So
right.
Everything that everybody bought with that IOU, you got a percentage of that. That's yours because you own it.
Right.
Your iPhone. So it's the same principle. Everything I buy with these dollar bills, everything I buy on credit, Federal Reserve credit, surety, anything that I use with security instruments are owned by the writer of the IOU. And the writer of the IOU is the Federal Reserve Bank. They wrote it. They own it. It's their property. You cannot own something that you bought with somebody else's property. You can only have equitable interest in it. And that's why
right.
we're in the dilemma that we're in. So say, for example, you're in your house. You know, you're behind on your taxes. They're foreclosing on you. The federal government gets to come in, and they put a price tag on everything in your house. How is it that they can do that? They can do that because they own it. It's theirs to begin with. They're just letting you use it. You were called, the legal definition of the term is a holder in due course. That's the legal definition. You're just holding the property for someone else. You don't own it.
Right.
Okay. Same way with our babies. Same way with your car and everything else. So in a nutshell, that's really what we're dealing with when we talk about this fiat currency. It's not real money. It's just IOU for property that's supposed to be held by the federal government, and it's not real.
Right, because when you look at ancient business transactions, they conduct their transactions with real, you know, material, whether
right.
it's some kind of resin. Whether it's with corn, they barter. Someone gets something in hand in exchange for a service or good.
Right.
Whether it's a goat, you know.
Whatever it is, right, goat, cow. And that's a property. See, that's the difference between a credit system and a property for property system. And what you're describing is a property for property. So back in the day when we were on the gold standard, I would go in and say, you know what, Charles, I need three cows and four chickens. I got 1/2 ounce of gold. Here, I'm going to give you the gold. You give me the three cows and the chickens. That's a property for property transaction. Ain't no IOUs, ain't no credit, no usury. That's, you know, in the Levitical law, they abolish usury for a reason, because that's stealing. When you're using security instruments and you're using credit, and all that type of thing, that's stealing from people. And that's why in the scriptures they talked about, you know, usury. That's against the law. You can't do that because you're stealing from people. So when we're doing property for property transaction, that's not usury. That's a property for property transaction.
Exactly. And I remember the 18th chapter of Ezekiel is described as compound interest.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point I was translating and I realized the term for multiplying the interest was eliminated from the English translation, and I really was they were talking about compound transition is actually murder.
Yeah,
that was a capital punishment.
Yeah.
You know, and it should be, because anyone who understands, like you said, there's metaphysics with this currency and economics. That we live in a system where, in order to have an economy, people must be murdered.
Yeah. And that.
And bought and sold and manipulated and just basically murdered. Murdered in order for to drive the economy. And they established it that way.
You hit it right on the nail. Because the next phase is, you know, you take it out from the civil application of that procedure to an international application, right? And the
right.
international application is whenever someone can't pay the debt, then you go to war. And that's why you go to war. There's no war that happens just by circumstance. You know, just
that's right.
War is a part of our economy. War is an integral part of the machine that runs America. It is part of it. And so when a country cannot pay their debts, then we send our military over. And we, you know, destroy their country and take what we want to take, just like we did with Iraq and Iran. I mean, not Iran, but Iraq.
It wasn't us.
Yeah.
We didn't.
Well,
they,
we, you know what I'm saying. But
I know,
saying,
I'm just trying to clarify this, but
I... Yeah. You know, we didn't do that, but I'm saying this is the policy, this is business as usual for the United States of America. And so,
right.
Again, war is a part of the economy. You cannot have an economy like this without a war part.
Now, I have another question about now we see we hear all this about China is holding so many U.S. dollars and we see that, I guess you can see the military movement where the United States is planning to surround China. So we're looking at a situation where this, like you said, when another nation can't pay its debts, then they foreclose with military power. But the United States is in a position where it can't pay its debts, but however it has greater military power or comparable military power as the people to whom it owes debt.
Yeah.
So are we looking at a situation where the United States of America is attempting to prevent itself from being foreclosed upon?
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, the United States is trying to evade that, but it's over with. I mean, it's done. I mean, we know if you kind of keep up with the current news on the economic trend of this country, it's very clear to me that China is not going to invade the United States. It doesn't have to do that. It's already made an invasion.
Mm-hmm.
China has already invaded the United States
with its products.
Yeah, with its products. So there's no, you know, when people say, you know, China and the United States are going to go to war, you know, I'm less open to that because it doesn't make business sense for China to do that. Because
right.
Nearly all of their products are consumed by American citizens.
Yeah, we'll take a break and right here so we can hear a few messages. We'll be right back.
Join the Woman Song Community Experience every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com. We will do the thing that many think cannot be done.
African Knowledge Beyond the Book appears every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are a literary society dedicated to the study of African-based psychoanalytical texts. We hope you will join us as we delve into the inner working of our African consciousness. African Knowledge Beyond the Book, every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com.
Listen to Love in Black with Charles and Jolivet on the Tribal Family Station on blogtalkradio.com.
There we will share our experiences and our insights on marriage and love, sex, respect, and honor. We're on every Thursday evening on the Tribal Family Station.
Nazareth, who's been dropping the science on us about the American United States currency and how the economic is driven by death and debt. Thank you, Brother Che, for joining us.
Brother, thank you for having me on. I appreciate your work, brother, and I wanted to say that to you earlier. You know, keep doing what you're doing, man. It's a need for it. And so I applaud you and your wife and your family, man, for doing the right thing because, you know, it's not a lot of venues today that really give the truth. And, so I commend you all for that.
I appreciate it. And yours, because you the one wrote the book. So we got to recognize.
So I think you were talking about China. we were talking about China. And you asked me if, did I feel, you know, are we impending a war with China, you know? And I said, I don't really feel that way because, as you mentioned earlier, you know, we have a relationship, an international agreement with China where China gets to bring all their products into the United States. And so we are the largest consumer of Chinese products in the world. So if you go through your home, a lot of us, if you go through your house, probably 80 to 90% of the products in your home were either made in China. Some of them were made in Korea, Taiwan, you know, Hong Kong. So we have a situation where China is buying up America. They don't necessarily have to invade militarily. They've already invaded, as you mentioned earlier, with their products. So I don't see an invasion, so to speak, like that. But it's been a quiet invasion, just like, you know, a silent weapon. So that's more along the lines I'm thinking about when I look at the China-United States situation. And you know, what we were talking about before was with, you know, okay, so America owes China all this money, you know. Well, yeah, I mean, if it gets way out of hand, China will just drop the dollar. And that's what the United States does not want to happen. They don't want these countries to drop the dollar from their currency. Iran threatened to do it, and Libya was threatening to seriously do it. And I believe that's one of the motivators among many to get Gaddafi, to get him, because, you know, he was really making some major moves for his country, you know, whether you agree with what he was doing or not, in terms of dropping the U.S. dollar, U.S. currency from his current currency base. And I know that was a serious issue for the United States. So the United States will try to bully and strong-arm these countries with the military, and ultimately, you know, it ends up in war. But the United States, you know, believe it or not, man, the country is not as strong as it used to be militarily even, because, you know, Quad is kept, they're not really reporting the accurate numbers of what's been happening over there in Iraq and in Afghanistan. They're not talking about, you know, the casualties that American troops are experiencing over there. And so, you know, the old days of thinking America just can't be beat, you know, that's a myth now, because other countries have come into power. They have nuclear apparatus at their disposal, and it's going to be different, man. It's going to be a different time if a war breaks out with any of these countries. It's not going to be a situation where the United States go in typically and just, you know, invade a country and take them over. Well, that's happened with Libya, it's happened with Iraq and Afghanistan, but that won't happen with a major power like China. Or, you know, even Korea, it would never happen. So.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. Sorry they had technical difficulties. We believe blogtalkradio.com censored the rest of this interview. This is a two-hour interview, conversation rather, and we merely just got to cover everything from what is United States citizenship and up to currency and economics. The subjects or topics that were eliminated by the network were biowarfare practiced by white supremacy on melanated peoples, and the bioremediation that we could use by way of naturopathy and homeopathic remedies to repair ourselves, and featuring Brother Chay's upcoming book, Agra Vultures, and another workbook he's coming out with as well, and his documentary of films that he's working on. I thank you all for come joining us this morning. But look like our time is running out on BTR.com because I guess the nature of programming that African Conversations and our sister programs produce is evidently too avant-garde or hostile to the white supremacy apparatus. And, well, thank you, and y'all have a great weekend. Bye-bye.